This is Happier. This week we talk about how to get yourself to go to sleep earlier and whether you're an abstainer or a moderator when it comes to resisting a strong temptation. I'm Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature, who lives in New York City. And with me is my sister, the sage, Elizabeth Kraft, who's my happiness guinea pig and questioner.
That's me. I'm Elizabeth Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA, and Gretchen makes me happier, even if it's against my will.
We're going to start with a suggestion you can try at home, a small, manageable habit that will actually make a big difference about how you feel each day. And our suggestion this week is to set an alarm to signal your bedtime.
I'm guessing this would require actually setting a bedtime.
Yes, this is a sneaky try this at home because it's actually two things. The first is to use an alarm to go to sleep, just like we use an alarm to get up. For a lot of people who have trouble going to bed on time, it's very helpful to just hear an alarm go off. There's just something about it. It triggers a behavior. You're like, oh, the alarm went off. I guess I have to do something. But as you point out, if you're going to have an alarm go off, you have to have it set for a specific time. And for a lot of adults, they don't really have a specific time. They just kind of go to bed whenever they're sleepy. You know, we're adamant about little kids having specific bedtimes.
Right.
But we don't give them to ourselves. And here's the thing. Research shows that most adults need at least 7 hours of sleep. And so do the math. You know, you know when you have to get up, do the math, count back 7 hours, and set yourself a bedtime. Now, I have a bedtime 10:30. Do you have a bedtime?
I do not have a bedtime. At midnight, I start thinking I should think about going to bed. And you know that I have this goal of waking up at 6 a.m. to write every morning. And I did it 2 mornings and I was traumatized the rest of the day. So I've forgotten that.
But you got to get a bed
earlier. I know, because I wasn't going to bed earlier. And so then I was exhausted. So I'm thinking, you know, even though it's totally against my whole being to set an alarm to go to bed, I think I might actually try this at home myself.
Put your money.
My husband's going to think I'm insane. He goes to bed about 2 or 3, by the way.
Oh, my gosh. But so here's the difference between you and me, I think, is that for me, going to bed early feels like a luxury. It feels indulgent to me to go to sleep as soon as I'm sleepy and then to wake up in the morning naturally. I feel like that's like a treat. And I feel like for you, it feels like the opposite of a treat. It feels like a duty or kind of an unpleasant chore to go to sleep earlier. Is that right?
Well, it's true in the moment when I'm actually deciding to go to bed, it feels like a chore. But when I sort of wake up throughout the night and then it's only 1 a.m. and I've been asleep for 2 hours, it feels great. So if I could just hold on to that feeling and remember it, you know, at midnight, or even better, 11 p.m., you know, I would be able to follow through. My problem is every night I forget that I woke up wishing I'd gone to bed earlier.
But see, that's the thing about setting an alarm, is that then you're not waiting for yourself to have that thought. Like something goes off and it's like, well, what do I want to do right now? I see that it's 11:30. I see that it's midnight. Am I going to stay up past my bedtime, or am I going to use the alarm to kind of start that downward cycle towards bed?
All right. Well, I'm going to set my alarm from 11:30 at 11:30 starting tonight.
Is that realistic?
I think it's semi-realistic. I think it's semi-realistic because my goal will be to move that back even more, you know, to get to my 6 a.m. wake up.
What time do you wake up in the morning?
7:30.
Oh, well, so midnight is actually 7.5 hours for you. So research would suggest that actually midnight is a pretty decent bedtime for you.
Great.
Because I think what happens to a lot of people is they get in this kind of wired but tired state where like they check their email or they turn on the TV and they get the second wind. And so you know, they feel like, well, I'm not tired. I don't need to go to sleep right now because I'm completely fine. Or they have a snack or they do something.
Or a second glass of wine. Yeah. I can attest to.
Yeah. And that gives you that second wind. And the second wind is deceptive because actually you're exhausted and you've just given yourself that sort of artificial jolt. And so you persist in staying up and thinking that you don't need to go to sleep, but actually you're really far short. And here's the funny thing about sleep deprivation. when a lot of people will say things like, well, I've trained myself to get by on 5 hours. But when scientists study these people, they're quite impaired. It affects mood, memory, immune function. But the thing about sleep deprivation is we adjust to it. So we don't realize how far off our game we are. We think we're fine. We think, oh, it's, you know, yeah, sure, it was hard to get out of bed, but now I feel fine.
Yeah.
But if we're in a lab and they, you know, had stuff stuck to your brain, they would be saying, this person is not fine. This person is not where they would be if they'd had a good night's sleep.
That's when I'm sure a lot of accidents happen too.
Oh, and in fact, you know, there's fewer accidents when the time changes each year because people have an extra hour of sleep. It actually does affect car crashes.
Wow.
Okay, so you're on the record. You're going to do it. Okay, try this at home.
I'm on the record.
Okay.
I'm on the record. I'm doing try this at home. Yes.
Excellent. Okay, well, let us know if you do try this at home, as well as Elizabeth, and have setting an alarm for a specific bedtime works for you. You can send me a tweet at Gretchen Rubin, connect on the Gretchen Rubin Facebook page, or drop us an email at podcast@gretchenrubin.com.
This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Elizabeth, now it's time for a question to help people know themselves better.
I know that this question, are you an abstainer or a moderator, is one of your favorites.
Oh my gosh, I love this question. And I recognize the abstainer-moderator distinction when I was reading one of my favorite writers, the 18th century essayist Samuel Johnson. And when someone asked Johnson to have a little wine, Dr. Johnson said, no. Abstinence is as easy to me as temperance would be difficult.
Mm.
Meaning he can say no, but he can't have just a little bit. He couldn't just have a little wine. And when I read that, I thought, I just had this thrill of identification. I thought, you know, that is exactly what I am. I'm an abstainer. So what is an abstainer? What's a moderator? So an abstainer is someone like me who is kind of all or nothing. I can have the whole bar of chocolate. I can have the entire bowl of ice cream, but I can't have a little bit. I can't have just one or two bites. I find it easy to give something up altogether, but I can't have just a little. So that I do better when I abstain from something that's a strong temptation. Then there are moderators, and moderators are just the opposite. They get kind of panicky and rebellious if they're told that they can never have something or they can never do something. And they do a lot better when they can have something sometimes, or they can have a little bit, or they can have a few bites. And so they do better when they indulge moderately. So when they're managing a strong temptation, they don't want to tell themselves no, never. They want to give themselves a little bit. And this turns out to be really important because a lot of times when we're trying to make ourselves happier, when we're trying to manage our habits, that comes down to how do we deal when we're faced with a strong temptation. Now, I'm 100% an abstainer. Elizabeth, what are you? What would you say you are?
Well, I think I always thought I was a moderator.
I always thought you were a moderator.
Well, I think it just turned out I had a great metabolism, so I could eat whatever I wanted.
And then I was bitter about that.
Then I hit 28. And it turns out I'm an abstainer. And, you know, I really sort of embraced this a couple of years ago when, you know, my downfall are French fries.
Yeah, kryptonite and is French fries. Yes,
absolutely. And
true.
I declared myself free from French fries.
Yeah,
I just
said,
I have
phrase.
To just let them go, leave my life. And I have not had a French fry since then. And that includes sweet potato fries. So this is a serious sacrifice.
Well, if you're giving up the sweet potato fries, then that's an abstainer. So no fries.
No fries. And, you know, it helps me know that I haven't, like, if I have a fry, that means I will have hit rock bottom and I need some sort of intervention, you know. It's my bottom. But the one problem I will say with this is I think other things can come in and take the place. Now I've feel like I'm a prisoner to potato chips because although I didn't used to eat Yes. Now I'm eating potato chips. So I think I also need to let those go, but I'm mentally not there yet.
Right.
But it's really true. It's easier to have none than have a few. And that's true for almost everyone that I've run across.
Well, and it's funny because people are a mix, because like I could be a moderator as to French fries because I like French fries, but I don't have that same kind of like, oh, I want to eat every French fry. If there was a serving there, I would eat them all because that's just my nature. But I don't have the same. You're a salty. I'm a sweet. And for me, it was much more about, you know, how much Halloween candy could I eat at one sitting and that sort of thing.
I will say, Gretch, I don't know if you remember, but you gave up cheese in college. So I think that was the beginning of your abstainer.
Well, this was the thing. I think in our culture, there's such a, everybody values moderation and you're supposed to be moderate. And it's like, use the 80-20 rule and be good 80% of the time and indulge 20% of the time or have a cheat day. And it took me a long time to until I read that Johnson quote, even when I kind of realized that it was easier for me to give things up altogether, I still wasn't really doing it because I felt like it wasn't the right way. I shouldn't just give something up altogether. When people think about abstaining, they think of it as being really hard and something that only people with a lot of self-discipline can do. But the funny thing, I mean, don't you think, that actually it's the easy way. It's the lazy way. The lazy
totally.
Way to give it up
yeah.
altogether. No, and so
yeah.
and this is, we're talking
then
about
Then you
food.
Don't have to make the decision.
Yeah, no decision. Get out of the decision. We're talking about food, but it's also for technology. I know a lot of people who, like, they can't play video games for 15 minutes.
That makes sense to me because I'm a Candy Crush person. And I have said the biggest, you know, obstacle in my career is Candy Crush. And I will sit and play for 3 or 4 hours. I buy extra lives and I just keep playing. I should take it off my phone. And I've thought that before.
You should. You should just take it off your phone. Then you could just...
I should. I don't know that I'm going to. I think if setting the alarm is all like, I'm going to do that for today, and then I'll ponder the Candy Crush.
I wonder why you call me a happiness bully, and then I do things like this.
Exactly.
If I'm right, it's like you'd have to go, if you took it off, you'd have to go back all the way to zero. So it would be like a really, it would be serious.
Yes, because I'm on level 437. That would be a... That would be major because, if I changed my mind and I put it back on and I was at zero, I would just I'd be crying.
But think about how much more work you'd get out of your... Maybe you could sleep later in the morning.
I would, and you know what? I would read novels. You know, I would do more reading.
I have a friend who gave up, who deleted Ruzzle because she said it was interfering with her reading. Literally. She's like, I can't read novels and play Ruzzle. I have to just... She deleted it from all her devices.
I admire her. And I'm going to think about that. That's going to go in the back burner.
So let us know if you're an abstainer or a moderator. And we're both abstainers. So if you're a moderator, let us know how being a moderator works for you. Send us a tweet at Gretchen Rubin or at Elizabeth Kraft. Another way to reach us is to leave a voicemail question for me and Elizabeth at 774-277-9336, which is 77-HAPPY-336. On upcoming shows, we'll be answering some of your questions. But since this is such an early episode, we don't have any calls yet.
So instead, we're answering a question posted to us from Gretchen's Facebook page. The question is, Gretchen, what was your biggest misconception about happiness before you wrote your first book about it?
Well, here's the thing. I was doing all my research about happiness, and I kept reading all these studies, all this research that said that novelty and challenge makes people happier. Like, even something as simple as going to a new restaurant makes people happier. But I thought the usual rules did not apply to me. I am one of these people who does very few things all the time. I eat the same food every day. I never leave my neighborhood. And so I thought, okay, for someone like me, familiarity and mastery are the secrets to happiness. Mm. But because I wanted to test everything out and see what worked, I started my blog.
Something new, right?
It was incredibly new. It was very intimidating. I didn't know how to do anything like that. I felt very stupid and incompetent and, you know, flailing around. And indeed, my blog has become a huge engine of happiness in my life. And a big part of it is that it was so new and challenging that I got this tremendous surge of a feeling of growth and competence and learning and a whole new world. And I really have become a believer that novelty and challenge really does boost your happiness. And how about you? What do you think?
Well, I mean, like you, I think that I like to do the same things. I go all to the same restaurants. I see the same people, et cetera, et cetera. But my, you know, that my job as a TV writer means that I actually, you know, have a new gig basically every, it could be 6 months, it could be a year, it could be, I mean, 3 years for me is a lifetime. Right. And each time I have a new job, it's a whole new set of people, you know, it's a new neighborhood, it's a new set of politics. And I really enjoy that challenge. Now, I will say I have my writing partner, Sarah, who comes with me to all these jobs. So I have my, you know, security blanket there.
Oh, well, that's interesting. So there's a thread of familiarity that you can kind of hang on to.
Yeah, which I think helps. But it is, I find it exciting and thrilling. And it's like an adrenaline rush to start a whole new situation. Although it also, obviously, I live with a lot of uncertainty. I also have a lot of excitement, you know, as Sarah says to me once in a while, she goes, we must enjoy this because we keep doing it.
Yes, we keep doing it. But that's a good point, is that novelty and challenge, the reason I think people shy away from them is a lot of time there's a period of discomfort where you're feeling uncertain and anxious, and you feel stupid and insecure and, you know, frustrated because you can't just like do what you want. You don't know exactly how to proceed. But if you can push through that, then you get to that big happiness boost.
And Gretch, tell me, do you still push yourself to do new things, or have, do you fall back into your sort of old pattern of not doing new things?
Well, we're pushing ourselves to do a podcast, and so I think that's a great novel and challenging thing, and it's making me very happy. How about you?
Good. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Novelty and challenge, podcasts. Excellent.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive.
I know that when I've been hiring, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to find quality candidates. It's really hard to handle the process. Hiring is easy when you have lots of quality candidates, like with LinkedIn Jobs. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. To wrap up the show, Elizabeth and I are going to get even more personal. First, one of us is going to give ourselves a happiness demerit for a mistake we made this week that affected our happiness.
Then, so we don't leave you on a down note, one of us is going to award a gold star to something or someone we think deserves to be recognized. Well, my demerit starts with the fact that it's flu season in Los Angeles, and despite flu vaccines, you know, it's getting many of us. And so in my house, my son Jack got the flu, my husband Adam got the flu, and our nanny Cynthia all got the flu. I'm one of the 23% that's actually, the flu shot worked for me, thank God.
Yeah.
But anyway, so our son is applying to kindergarten right now, which is its own
fresh hell.
Yeah, exactly. And we had an interview scheduled at one of the schools for a Friday. Now, on Monday, Adam was in the full throes of the flu, but we thought, well, by Friday, he'll be fine.
Yeah.
I didn't want to move the interview because the truth is I just wanted to get it done. You know, I was nervous and stressed, and I wanted to cross it off the list. So I said, I'll leave it. He'll be fine by Friday. Well, you know, the days pass, and although he isn't contagious anymore, he still felt horrible.
Right.
And this is a 2-week flu for sure. And then yet, as the days pass, the closer you get to something like a kindergarten interview, the harder it is to actually change it.
Right. The more disruptive it is.
Yeah, the more you look like, you know, the jerk parent. Yeah. Exactly. So by Friday morning, we had to go through with it. And what I realized as we were driving to the interview and Adam was chugging cough syrup and, you know, blowing his nose, was that I should have just changed the interview when I knew he was sick Right. But it was just my own selfish desire to get it done that kept me from changing it. And so I need to, like, basically, you know, step outside myself and think about other people is you know, the rule.
I got to say, in your place, I would have done the exact same thing, because I know that feeling of just so desperately wanting to get it over that it's like nothing is going to stop it, you know.
Yeah, it might be a maternal thing, but I'm not proud of it. And as I was driving, I thought, oh, this is definitely a happiness demerit.
Not a high point. Well, okay, let's turn our attention to happier things then, and, like, do the gold stars. That's more fun. Okay.
Yes.
So I want to give a gold star to our mother, because she had a brilliant idea, the update. So Elizabeth and I, you know, we were home for our high school reunions. We're 5 years apart, so we're on the same high school reunion schedule. So we were home.
Very
so
convenient.
It was the four of us, mom, dad, Elizabeth, Gretchen. And my mom was thinking about a thing that many people have observed, which is this weird phenomenon where somebody that you see every day, you have a million things to tell and to talk about with. But if you see somebody more rarely, you're like, what's up? Nothing, you know, and you don't have anything to say. And she was like, well, so why don't we just try to keep each other in the loop more? Like, just really very, very regularly, just update everybody on something. And we all agreed immediately that this was a brilliant idea. We decided to call it up. We never really decided to call it update. It just, we started calling the emails update. That's what we all adopted. And the motto of update is, it's okay to be boring. And we just write the most boring things that are going on. But it's actually
daily minutia.
It's amazing. It's great. And I've been amazed. Like, something so simple that takes no time or energy really has made me feel so much more connected to everybody, you know, because you just know those little things that are going on. And then when you do talk, you can ask, you say, oh, well, what happened with that interview?
Absolutely.
Or, oh, you know, is everybody over the flu? Or how was that service, that memorial service that you went to, or whatever? It's just easier to show that affection and that engagement.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, I love this. I think it makes it feel like our family is very, like, dynamic and you know, evolving, because we're all in each other's business a lot more. And it really just takes a minute, especially if you truly let yourself be boring, as we all do.
And I
get to tell you what the weather is in LA when you're in the polar vortex, which I enjoy.
You do rub that in, I have to say. I don't appreciate the constant, like, what's your amazing weather in LA? I sit in New York. But it makes me so happy to see the up. Like, when I see it in my inbox, it's like a little something that I'm interested
in
that I want to read. And that's it for this episode of Happier. Remember, try this at home. Set the alarm for a specific bedtime. Choose a specific time, set the alarm, and most important, turn out the light.
Our producer is Henry Malofsky. Please let us know what you think of the show. Gretchen's on Twitter at Gretchen Rubin, and I'm at Elizabeth Kraft. Our email address is podcast@gretchenrubin.com.
If you like this show, please be sure to tell a friend and subscribe to us on iTunes. And remember to leave a voicemail. It's 774-277-9336. That's 77-HAPPY-336.
Until next week, I'm Elizabeth Kraft.
And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Thanks for joining us. Onward and upward.